Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome everybody to this issue commentary podcast. Now this is the issue commentary for the December 2017 issue, or issue 1108 if you've been counting since 1924. Now the point of the podcast is to tell you some of the behind the scenes stories about the construction, the production of this issue, and what a fine issue it is. We would like you to tell your friends if you enjoy this podcast, and likewise tell your friends if you've enjoyed the magazine this month. Word of mouth is still a phenomenal marketing activity in these days of social media, so let your friends know. And I think we're still unique in that we produce this issue commentary. So this is something to enjoy, hopefully, while you have the magazine in front of you. And I say this every month in the commentary, but if you don't have the issue in front of you, stop listening, go out and buy one. You can get it all over the world. In America, take a look in Barnes & Noble. In the UK, all good news agents, supermarkets, and various other places as well. Not enough. Everyone says that, don't they, on the team? Speaking of the team, I have here today, it's great to welcome as ever, we have art editor Damon Cogman.
Hello.
And we have features editor Simon Aaron.
Good afternoon.
And we have deputy editor Joe Dunn.
Hello.
How is everyone? How's everyone all right today?
We're good.
Yeah.
It's not bad today, is it?
Yes, just finished a good issue, so everything's good.
Excellent. Well, let's dive straight in. Actually, we won't dive straight in, we'll dive straight on.
Yes. We know what you mean.
The cover.
That's okay. On the front, definitely on the front.
God, the cover this month. This was Damon and everyone, Joe, the whole, wow, this was a really tricky one, wasn't it? And was that, Damon?
it always is. We say the same every month. When we go and do these behind-the-scenes podcasts, we always say the same thing. These are the single most difficult, tricky...
stressful.
pages that we do.
And everyone's got a comment. Everyone wants to
an expert.
Yeah.
It's like all the other pages, all kind of breezes by, but the cover suddenly, wow! Everyone wants to have a little chat. But it's all good. But the one thing that having two people on the cover always throws up a challenge is you're always trying to find a balance between the two people. You're trying to get two people to interact, you're trying to get two people to be in the same picture at the same time, because weirdly on the track they actually spend so little time together, as in right next to each other. They're usually following each other, they're usually sort of a few feet apart, so actually trying to squeeze them onto a cover in a car.
This is Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton, we should say.
These
are the two people we're talking about.
Two superstars of F1, yeah.
Absolutely.
And we didn't really want to go conventional either, did we?
No, absolutely not. We always want to try and do something different. So
yeah, I was going to say that they were very, very much side by side in Baku earlier this year, weren't they?
They were.
You know, no pictures.
I really wanted a picture of that with sparks and waved fists and everything that would fit perfectly in that slot, but I think they had other things on their mind than the motorsport cover at that point. They weren't thinking of magazine covers. So what did we do then, Damon? How did we get to the point where we have this quite intriguing shot of Lewis and Sebastian?
Well, I think we, as with all these covers, we always end up with a big pile of images to choose from, but this kind of stood out as being a little different and a little bit off kilter, which is what motorsport sort of does well, I think. We sort of try and go, we try and sort of see the picture that tells a story and kind of just tries to do something a little bit more than just look nice. Yeah. So we're always trying to sort of go that extra mile.
It's an advert as well, isn't it? It's an advertisement for the magazine this month.
Yeah.
So it has to be striking, that's for sure. Mm. And Joe and Simon, what do you think of the return to red?
Well, it's in the right place.
If you don't have the issue in front of you,
it's the sound of subscribers falling over at this point.
I can hear the cornflakes being choked on as we speak. It's below the masthead, so it's in the right place. I've got to say it's one of my favourite covers. I think it's absolutely stunning and very eye-catching. As you say, as an advertising tool, I mean, it tells you what's in the magazine, and it's a real bumper issue, I think, this issue, which obviously we're going to talk about, but I love it.
Yeah, I mean, there's an old adage, isn't there, somewhere in fashion about red and green should never be seen, but I think
they've obviously never seen your T-shirts, have they? Well,
they probably shouldn't have seen
it. I love this. Damon is now this arbiter of fashion.
Yeah. But I have to say, in photographs and here on the cover, I find them very... I think red and green are very complementary.
Yeah.
Robin on a holly bush or something. I just find the whole thing... And I think it...
That's
very good. Yeah. Nicely dropped in.
That was
good.
Yeah, and... I think it's very difficult to be impartial when you're discussing something you've just sweated over for a week or three. But I think the red and green work really well together. And the image of the two drivers, whether they're having a waltz, a cuddle, a fight, it's hard to tell.
Strictly, sumo.
I'm happy with the result.
I can't move on from the cover without mentioning the
fonts.
Not the fonts this time.
Oh, wow.
Let's go for the gloss. Gloss versus matte finish.
You've got this great theory, haven't you?
It's a tactile experience, as all magazines are.
This could take some time.
What you need to do is you need to pick the magazine up in your actual hands in the real world, and put your thumbs across the cover off on the front, and then your fingertips on the back. And on your fingertips on the back, you'll have a nice glossy approach, and then on the front, you'll have a mixture of matte and gloss running over your fingertips, over your thumbprints, and it becomes a lovely tactile experience. And suddenly, the gloss and the matte kind of make sense.
You're making it sound like a home-based podcast.
It's brilliant. We obviously, the tactile quality is very important. And do you know what? Joking aside. Magazines across the board, there have been challenges in the last 5 to 10 years or so about the quality and the overall perceived quality of newsstand magazines. And some have reduced the quality, some have changed their paper stock, some have moved away from cover finishes, some have reduced the investment in the content types or the contributors or whatever else. We are of the belief that quality is the right approach for us. It always has been in the past and always will be in the future. So we are going to just maintain this strategy, this idea that the motorsport magazine is collectible, it's enjoyable for content reasons, from an experience perspective, and as Damon quite rightly says, from a tactile perspective as well. But no, I don't want to denigrate the work that anyone's done on it. I mean, we do absolutely adhere to those beliefs, don't we? That quality sells. Should we dive in now?
Definitely.
All right. Let's okay. go. So behind the scenes, I'm going to go to the. Let's go through the regulars. We have, as ever, Formula One News, International News, GT3, Road, Cars, Rallying, Historic. We have the Tomorrow's World page. Mark Hughes, Dickie Meaden, Matt Oxley, Richard Williams, Doug Knight, Gordon, Quickshank, Letters, Books, Arts and Memorabilia, Model Cars, Parting Shot. So we have all the great regulars in there.
Missed out club
for you
racing.
To enjoy. Are you there? You are. Oh, goodness me. That's awkward. I've had two awkward podcasts now. So the podcast yesterday with Jerry Horner, and you'll have to listen to that one, or if you haven't, check out.
I think this one might come out before the other.
Basically, we recorded a podcast yesterday with Christian Horner and Horner, and Jerry Horner Halliwell was there, and I asked an awkward question, and Jerry. Anyway, listen to the podcast. It was
it's a hell of an advert.
So anyway, so now I've gone and forgotten that Simon's got a fantastic spread in there.
I didn't say it was fantastic, I just said it was there.
We're going to have to talk about it now, aren't we?
Simon, tell us what's in this fantastic Club Racing and Beyond column this month.
I think there are contents of greater moment that we should discuss, but very briefly, Alton Park is mentioned. Really? And other things.
Wow. Okay. Good stuff. I'm going to go to Joe then. Joe, tell us your favourite feature in the magazine this month, on sale now, if you're listening to this in November 2017.
Modesty prevents me from talking about my own feature.
But you're going to anyway.
No. Best feature, I would say. I mean, I love Mark's cover story. It's brilliant. It's timely. But I loved the Bernie Eccleston interview, which Richard Williams did a fantastic job with. First time, really, that someone's kind of had a proper sit-down interview with Bernie since he left the sport about a year ago. Richard Williams manages to really get under the skin of Bernie, who's a difficult man to interview. I mean, he's been interviewed so many times, he can twist kind of inexperienced journalists around his little finger, and what you end up getting is reading essentially a press release that, you know, that Bernie wanted to put out there. But Richard Williams is obviously, you know, an experienced and wily journalist, and it's far too good and experienced to sort of fall for that. So he's really kind of got under the skin of Bernie, gives a chapter and verse on what he's doing now, where he thinks he went wrong, where he went right during his time at the helm of Formula One. There's a great little scene in there where he sort of looks at Richard Williams, asks him if he misses Formula One, and Bernie fixes him with a gaze and says, I do miss it. And then goes on to saying, I remember when I left and was ousted from my position by Chase Carey, and he was sat right where you're sitting now, looking at Richard Williams, and told me that I was off because he wanted my job. I mean, it's just brilliant, brilliant interview, and a lovely story, and a great exclusive for the magazine. So that would be my nomination for top feature this month.
And it was nearly the cover, wasn't it, Damon?
It was nearly the cover. The image that we used on the main feature, which is sort of like a scene out of a Godfather or sort of Italian gangster film image.
What are you implying, Damon? Damon's opinions are not necessarily shared with the...
Hamish, can you just edit that bit out, please? done it again. But he's sort of shown in his earlier days, looking a bit bit gangstery, isn't he? And it's what with that and the heading is a fantastic way to kick off a Bernie interview, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the cover. You're absolutely right. That image that we've used on the opener, we looked very hard at using that image on the cover. We just couldn't make it work. It's obviously a film image. It wouldn't have blown up and delivered the quality that we would have liked for the cover. Bernie is a divisive figure, isn't he? We had doubts about whether it would sell.
people tend to be. I mean, they're rather fascinated to read about him. But the trouble is, quite often when he appears in print, as Joe mentioned, he's very good at saying things that don't actually say anything. But which is one of the nice things about, again, as Joe's mentioned, one of the nice things about Richard's piece is that, you know, he's actually got answers to the questions he's asked.
Yeah.
Which with Bernie, you always get answers, but sometimes they take you back to the point where you started and you're still none the wiser. But I think he's done a very, very good job.
Excellent. Have you interviewed Bernie?
I have, yeah, two or three times.
Yeah.
And generally I found him okay. Fascinating, sometimes you chat to him about things. He can remember in crystal clear detail something that went on in 1954, 55. And you move forward a few years, discuss something else, and I can't remember that at all. And then, okay, right, how come? He said, I was doing something else. Oh, okay, whatever. But yeah. I mean, he'll only chat about what he wants to chat about. But I can't claim to know him well, yeah. But I have interviewed him a few times, and I've always enjoyed the experience because it's a bit of a chess match in some ways, because you're kind of trying to think where's his mind going, and where do I need to place my mind to get my mind in the right place to ask the next, because he's going off over there somewhere. Yeah.
Fantastic, Joe. You're also being modest about how this interview was set up, because that was your handiwork, wasn't it? You made it happen.
Well,
how did you do it?
There's no great secret to it. I mean, sometimes I think, and you know, I've been in this game long enough to know that sometimes you get lucky, and this, I think this is one of those. And Bernie is one of those sort of, essentially, we'd been trying and we put, you know, feelers out and suggested to him and his people that he might want to sit down with us, you know, and this has been going on for weeks and weeks and weeks, and it'd all gone, the trail had gone cold. And so I thought, well, you know, let's try the front door approach, and literally called up his office in central London, got through to the right person, asked if we could do an interview. They said they'd get back to me, and 5 minutes later I got an email back saying, yeah, can you do next Tuesday? So it just happened that quickly. I suspect what happened was that his personal assistant literally went next door to Bernie, who was sat at his desk, maybe a bit bored, and he said, yeah, okay, let's do it. And so rather than going through various PR people and different channels and sponsored channels and all this, you know, you go through the front door. And sometimes that's the most effective route. You know, it's the route one. And it doesn't always work. Most of the time it doesn't work. But on this occasion it did. And it was good timing because, as I say, it's a year since he left. And maybe he felt he had a few things to get off his chest, which he did.
He certainly did. Yeah, absolutely. Right then, let's... I think we'll go into the cover story now. So this is a package of content that's based around surely the defining rivalry of the modern Formula One era. How do we feel that Sebastian and Lewis are the two rivals currently in Formula One with Max and Daniel?
I think this year they have become so, but I mean it's the first time. Really, I mean, 2010, they were both in a title fight at the last race as the two outsiders and Seb won. But generally, they've not... I mean, Seb wasn't fighting with Lewis when he had a competitive McLaren. Mm. The McLaren wasn't quite effective enough against the Red Bull when it was dominant. This is the first... And then Mercedes has had a period of dominance. It's the first time the two of them have properly been head-to-head on a weekend-by-weekend basis. In competitive cars.
I'm sure that makes it much all the sweeter for Lewis to have come out on top this time.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. I mean, it's a pity to my mind that Ferrari dropped the ball a little bit with its reliability for a couple of races, and then there was the incident in Singapore as well, which has taken the sting out of the last couple of races of the year in terms of the title fight. Yeah. Which it's always nice for it to go down to the finale. Yeah. But it's been a very, very good battle for the most part, I think.
I think we in this story in particular, Mark has managed to go into that the granular detail, hasn't he? He's really explored where the edge is, both in terms of the drivers and the cars. And I think did we tot up the word count in these two articles? But we must be nudging 7,000, maybe more words.
My fingers don't go that high, but it was a lot of words.
it was a lot. I mean, if you haven't got the magazine in front of you, it's kind of a two part story. So we have an insight into the guys, the men themselves, and also some fantastic insights into their character. And their personalities. I was just about to reveal some stuff, but I won't do it. There's a great quote that we pulled out. Wheel to wheel, he can be unreasonable, but just up to the point of plausible deniability, he's very skilled at treading that line. Who are we talking about there?
We're not allowed to give it away, are we?
We're talking about one of the drivers there. If you're intrigued, you know what to do. And the second part is about is a very detailed look at the cars this year.
Yeah, I mean, Mark has got an unparalleled understanding of the technical side and his ability to watch all the cars at a certain point on a track and detect little nuances in the way they behave. I don't think there's anyone else who can do... No one else does that, analyses that as well as he does. And with both parts of this feature, he's spoken to the right people. He's got a fantastic understanding of the driving dynamics. I mean, not many people know that he was a finalist in the Jim Russell World Scholarship thing back in 1990 against Stefan Beloff. Yeah. Mark does understand the driving side very, very well. And he's talked to all the right people here, to both on the technical side and with regard to the drivers as individuals.
And we have to credit Paolo D'Alessio as well. Absolutely. And his illustrations are fabulous in here. And I don't think these have been published, certainly not on this scale before. And Damon, talking of little nuances, I believe Mark when he had a cast his eye over the PDF, he asked you to change, or not change, but he asked you to adapt.
Yeah,
this is a little nuance. Go on,
as you can imagine, there is the illustrations that we've used are incredibly in depth and detailed and perfection personified. But they the funny thing was, Mark kind of saw the pages before they went to the printers and saw that the angle of the Mercedes and the angle of the Ferrari were slightly different, because Ferrari has a much more of a rake than the Mercedes, so we had to artificially raise one up by, I'm going to say, like a millimetre or something in the context. It was a tiny, tiny amount. And also the wheelbase is slightly longer on the Mercedes. So if you kind of look at the pictures side by side as they are, you'll notice that the front wing just tips out the side of the box a bit more than it does on the Ferrari. And so it's tiny details, but these are all the things that we could spend hours sort of poring over.
Yeah. Amazing detail.
Mm. So, and then, if you get your protractor out and your ruler, you'll find that the drawings are accurate.
Did you say your sextant?
I did.
Taking this overseas.
Isn't that what you use?
No.
Protractor, compass.
That's the one. Yes.
Compass.
Not
a sextant.
Not the sextant.
Right. Pair of compasses.
Yeah. Ah, there we go. No. I was just going to go look in my pencil case and see what's in there. For a sextant.
You won't find it there.
No. Big for pencil cases.
Oh, dear.
Right.
So we do enjoy ourselves putting this, yes. this title together. Page 76, and then if you turn over to page 78, you will see fabulously. I don't know about Joe and Simon. I don't know about you, but I love these illustrations. The it takes me back.
I was going to say there's something very kind of old school about it, and I don't know why I sort of think that, but it's just, I just love the way that, 'cause you get so used to these days, I think, seeing photographic cutaways and kind of computer generated images that go on, you know, that show the sort of skeleton or the inside of the insides of cars. But these sort of drawings, there's just something about them which I think is just really magical. And you talk about tactile, they almost feel like you can kind of touch them, you know.
This is what magazines do so, or magazines allow us to do so well, is that kind of really indulgent kind of, here's a massive picture and here's something you can see every nut and bolt and every detail. And obviously the fabulous illustrators allow you to really kind of get stuck in visually.
It makes you wonder on page 76 when you look at the Mercedes and you see the cutaway where the engine cover is. Where's the engine?
Yeah, it's in there somewhere.
You know, there's nothing really, apart from maybe the kind of twisted rope of the exhaust, there's nothing really that it's points you.
No.
There's no
the actual cover, engine bit. Nothing. Yeah, it's tiny, isn't it? Yes, it's tucked away under there. Under
but
all
it doesn't
bits.
Even look like a... It looks like a gas turbine
yeah,
or something,
it does.
Doesn't it? You
know? It's a massive turbine on top of a tiny engine.
I'm quite confident when I say that I don't think you'll find a more in-depth analysis of... The great Formula One rivalry this year, and I'm not just talking about Sebastian and Lewis, I'm talking about Ferrari and Mercedes as well. So please take a good look at this, because if you have any questions about either the drivers or the cars this year, I'm pretty sure we've answered them all. So top work all around there, I think, from the team.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Where should we go next, Dave?
Let's go lunch. Let's go to Joe's lunch.
Oh. So, Joe, I want to... It's behind-the-scenes stuff. So it's Ari Vatanen. He jumps on a plane. You went to see Harry, who lives off up in, it's sort of Route Napoleon way, isn't it? In south of France.
It's about 2 hours north of Marseille. And I mean, the story of getting him, I mean, I said earlier about chasing down Bernie, and it was similar with Harry. And I ended up, I think, forming quite a nice friendship with him over email. We were just pinging emails backwards and forwards, and then one date would work for him but wouldn't work for us, or then it fell through for him at the last minute, and it just went on and on and on. And then eventually he said, in fact, I got a phone call from him, and he called up, and his voice on the end of the phone said, "Is that Joe?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Can you do Tuesday?" And he didn't introduce himself, but I knew exactly who it was. And I was like, "Yes."
Did you hear the sound in the background of Mark Tewis going sideways.
I thought, there's only one man that could be. Speaking of which, what a fantastic opening picture that is.
Oh, well, Simon, I mean, when we were looking at the layouts of this, you said something to me then when you first, in fact, you said, "Nick, you've got to see the opener." Tell me what you see in this image.
I see Harry Vatanen. I mean, but not, it's just the spirit of Vatanen.
Yeah.
The way I think the sport most closely identifies with Vatanen. We know he drove the 205 T16 and brilliantly and so on and so forth. But it's the early days in the UK, firstly with the battered Opel and then with a series of increasingly battered Escorts. But, I mean, that photograph, it's a photo of a Rothmans backed Escort, very, very sideways, and I can't remember if it was in the Scottish or the Welsh rally. But it's clearly going very quickly. It's got battle scars all over it, and it's as sideways as you can get a car without vaulting into the trees. It's just lovely. And loads of dust.
Yeah, and his hands just on top of the wheel. Yeah. He's just looking sideways through there with his Simpson Bandit helmet. I mean, it's brilliant. Great pit, great opener,
yeah,
Damon. Great,
very good,
great
yes.
design. And we have... we've consciously, with our lunch with approach, since we did the redesign a few issues ago, we're opening now with an archive shot of the subject, which I just think it gives us an opportunity to use a cool archive shot really big, and then it's accompanied by shots of the character
lunch.
Today,
absolutely.
Enjoying their lunch. Yeah. And Joe, how was the lunch? Where did you go? And what was
it was very nice, a very nice lunch. We went to his. In fact, he suggested the restaurant, which was local to his rather beautiful farmhouse in Provence. And unfortunately, it's only open at the weekends in the winter months, and this was a couple of weeks ago, so it's technically the sort of winter over there for them. And so it wasn't open on the Tuesday. So I said, "Oh, that's a great shame." He said, "Don't worry, I'll call the owner, who I know very well." And he called the owner, and the owner agreed to open up for us. So we ended up having this restaurant high up in the hills, completely deserted, completely to ourselves, with the owner, a lovely man called Richard, and his wife, serving us copious amounts of rather delicious food. And we sat there for hours and hours. And Harry is, Kimmy, Kankinen, and other Finns you can think of, aren't particularly talkative, and Harry is not. He's completely opposite. He's funny. He's got lots to say. He's engaged. It was a real pleasure to talk to him.
My favourite bit. Stories. My favourite bit of your sort of adventure was your little drive from his house to the restaurant.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which you filmed, didn't you, with your phone?
I did. I couldn't not film it because it's a. So basically, it's a dirt track. I had a hire car, a Fiat Tipo, I think. And it's a dirt track leading up to this restaurant halfway up a mountain. And as we got on the dirt track and Harry was driving my hire car because he knew the way, I suddenly realised this is just like Climb Dance, the Pikes Peak video or film from Peugeot from back in 88, I think it was, when he broke the record. And it's one of my favourite films. It's only 5 minutes long, but it's absolutely brilliant. I'm sure you all know it. And I thought, this is it. I'm in Klein Dance. So I had to get my phone out and film Harry as he was driving this car up this dirt track going sort of through hairpin bends as we climbed up the mountain. And him talking to me about Pikes Peak, about, you know, going sideways and life being monotonous without sideways. Fantastic. It was a short notice trip, but it was a fantastic trip. He's a very interesting man.
Well, you captured it brilliantly. Let's jump over to, from the south of France, let's go to Prescott via Indianapolis. Simon?
This is
a Simon Aaron special, this one. But tell us about the fish out of water on page 118.
Yeah, I mean, I was planning to go to the Prescott Autumn Classic, come what may. Hmm. And you and I were looking through the entries, some of the stuff that was going to be there, and we spotted PC22 Penske, which... wasn't going to be competing, but it was going to be demonstrated. And it just seemed like an odd place to be demonstrating an IndyCar, really. A narrow English garden path for something that was designed really to turn left every so often. And the car, it was in a private collection in the States for a long time, and it's now being run by a family from a garage in Selby, North Yorkshire. And they prepped the whole thing themselves, and... it's a lovely bunch of people, and they plan to demonstrate it. They'll race it if they can.
Yeah.
But they want to be as active with the car as possible, the Smith family, and it was just a nice thing to see. Just something a little bit different because, I mean, I go to Prescott 3 or 4 times a year if I can, and you're used to seeing Austin Sevens and Bugattis and obviously modern British hill climb stuff going up there, but to see something like that. In fact, it wasn't possible for the car to do the full climb, not because of the nature of the hill climb course itself.
Ah, you're going to give it away, aren't you?
But yeah, I'm not.
Okay.
But for a very improbable reason, it was unable to actually do a full climb, so they kind of cobbled together a route it could do towards the bottom of the hill. But read the issue to see the peculiar reason why... an Indianapolis Penske couldn't actually go to the top of Prescott.
Brilliant. No, it's a fab piece. You're right. As soon as we saw the car on the entry list, we thought, oh, we've got to take a look at this. And let's hope it races next year. There's a few series it can race in. So, let's hope it gets out on track. We're running out of time, I'm afraid, but we're going to jump onto the last two features. We have Six of the Best, which is Dickie Meaden's track test of the wonderful JPS BMW 635 CSI. And what a beautiful machine it is. There's something about the JPS livery.
I think there's something about just a 635 as well.
Yeah, it's the noise, it's those arches. Yeah. We all got very excited about this, didn't we?
It's another great story from Dickie. And of course, this car was raced by Jim Richards, the original driver at the Silverstone Classic. And Dickie had spent a fair amount of time with Jim discussing the car. And then ironically, then the next day they were nose to tail on the track. This is an exclusive. Motorsport is the only title that has driven this great JPS BMW 635i. And there's a great shot on page 95, a close-up of...
It's just very excited. And there's also an amazing video on our YouTube channel, courtesy of Hamish, who sat next to me, with an onboard. And there's some lovely archive stuff in there as well. It's absolutely spectacular. Go to our YouTube channel to go and live through Dickie's eyes actually driving it. It's amazing.
That's youtube.com/motorsport1924. Now we are more active on YouTube these days. We are producing quite a lot of video content. Subscribe to the channel. If you subscribe to the channel, then you'll be the first to know of any new videos that we're posting. But I can guarantee the kind of stuff that we're doing at the moment, I'm pretty sure isn't being replicated anywhere else at the moment. Great access to cars. We've got some really great drivers that can explore them and tell the story. So
it's a great How to Drive series, of course, as well.
The How to Drive series is superb, and we're going to be filming a new series soon. Take a look at YouTube. Now, the X-Files, Mulder and Scully, what's going on here? Colin Chapman's reputation as an innovative genius endures, but some of his cars perform less well than others. The imperfect Lotus 10 was one such, but modern thinking has eliminated some of its design flaws. Simon, you know where I'm going to this one.
I suspect you're going to turn to me, aren't you? Yeah, Nigel Rees, very experienced in setting up or helping to sort the handling of old racing cars. This is the third in a series he's done, Arrows A4, then the Scarab and the Lotus 10. One thing they have in common, they're all rubbish in period, or relatively rubbish in period. And using modern setup tools and modern software to interpret why and where the cars fail to deliver in period, they're able, you know, his company GSD Racedyne, have I said that correctly?
Yes.
Have been able to alter the handling characteristics of cars that didn't work terribly well when they were new, and nowadays in historic racing they perform much better against cars that would have walloped them in period. And the Lotus 10, as I say, is one such, as the third of three in a series, and it's just a nice, it's a nice analysis of, it's quite funny, you're reading through, Nigel's got all the details about weight distribution and ride heights and all this sort of stuff, and it's often quite simple things that transform the car, the way the car performs, but simple things that couldn't be analysed in 1958 because the tools to analyse them didn't exist. And it's quite a nice a modern take on, you know, an old classic. That's
a weird little sidebar to all of this is the image that we used on the opening pages of this was actually really, really, really hard to find.
Page 82 and 83, yeah.
Yeah, the car wasn't around for very long. It only competed for, I think, a year, maybe 18 months.
Because it was rubbish.
Because it was rubbish. And not many people kind of bought one, so there weren't many around. So we had a real trouble trying to find images for this particular car. And in the end, we had to go to America to find pictures of a Lotus 10 at Snetterton.
We went all the way to America.
We went
America.
All the way to America.
I haven't signed that expense.
Via the internet. By the power of the internet. But it was kind of a weird little sidebar that there was barely a picture from any archives from any English photographers of the Lotus 10 in period. Weird, but there we go.
Well, speaking of photographs, the final feature that we'll mention quickly before we wrap up for the day is the You Were There special, which, I mean, it's one of the highlights of the month, would you say, Joe, when Damon says, "Oh, come and have a look at these. I think this could be a You Were There." This is a fabulous one, isn't it? This is from our reader, Tim Reed, who went to school very close to Silverstone. Have you heard of Silverstone?
Yes, I've been once or twice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's on the way to Auburn Park.
Exactly, I drive past on the way to Auburn, correct, yes.
But this is fabulous, isn't it, Joe? This is on page 98, and we have a mixture of black and white and colour photography from the 60s Formula One, and what can you say? It's got everything, isn't it? Jim Clark, Mike Spence, Denny Holm. Everything.
This is proper indulgence, and this proper motorsport indulgence, this one.
Yeah.
It's one of my favourite bits of the mag, actually, this month in particular, because the quality of the shots is very good.
Yeah.
And it's just, and the subject as well. I mean, it's John Surtees having his first run ever in a Cooper after he'd split with Ferrari in 66. And I'm not sure I've seen those.
No.
Tim, when I spoke to Tim, he thinks he might have been the only photographer there that day.
Wow.
And just for this stuff to surface, you know, more than 50 years on.
Yeah.
I mean, admittedly, they had been sitting in an envelope on our shelf for a while, but I'm delighted they've now made it into the magazine.
But it makes you wonder, doesn't it, how much more stuff there is out there.
Absolutely.
So if you're listening and you have something, or you remember there's something up in your loft, you know, send
Absolutely.
It in.
Send them in, and we'll scan them in and return them safely, and we will make sure we look after them. But we'd love to see them.
And in fact, on a related note, before we wrap up, tomorrow I'm off to visit a gentleman who's been buying the magazine since the early 1930s. We believe he's our longest-serving reader. And he's a big motor racing fan. He was at Snetterton recently. And we were... I got an email from his daughter who said he reads the magazine, he loves it. Would you mind just writing an email saying we appreciate that you read the title? And I said, no, I'm going to come and
come have a chat.
Wait, I'm going to come around for a cup of tea
I'm
and a biscuit.
Come and have a cup of tea. So yeah, tomorrow I'm off to meet who we believe is our longest serving reader. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Unless you know we're an older one or somebody with a longer survey. Yeah. Then we'd love to hear.
It's probably time we reintroduced our guest editor feature, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. What are you trying to say, Simon? Joe's waving something at me before we wrap up.
Oh, I was merely going to mention that there readers will spot that there is a precision supplement in this month, which is our celebration of fantastic and quite expensive sometimes watches. Some readers feel a bit shortchanged when they see this 30-page section and say that we've ejected cars for watches. I would just like to say once again that these 30 pages are extra. They're on top of our standard pagination. So if you're buying the magazine, you're getting exactly the same number of pages and the same quality of pages and about cars. The watch element is in addition to, not instead of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it is from a business perspective. You know, there's no doubt that there's real there's a connection between motoring and watches. The watch manufacturers enjoy seeing their content and their advertising in motoring magazines. So it's an important for us to recognise that industry and to support it from a commercial perspective. Joe's absolutely right. They're additional pages. I hope you enjoy them. There's some interesting stuff in there.
There's some good stuff in there.
So yeah, all good. So guys, I'm sorry to. Oh, no, we could talk forever.
We always come in here.
We've got
saying,
a magazine to get.
Yeah, we always come in here saying, "Well, we'll just do half an hour," and then an hour later, we've got to wrap it up.
But thank you again. So thanks to Damon Cogman, our art editor. Thanks, Damon.
No problem.
And Simon Aaron, thank you very much ever, Simon, and for all your hard work on the issue, and also to you, Joe Dunn, our deputy editor, and also for the fantastic Ari Vatanen story. It's a cracker. You've done really well there. So
and of course to the rest of the gang, of course. Let's not forget the rest of the team.
Goodness me.
That was close.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, they're not here, so... You
know. Well, that's right. They won't listen to this, will they? Surely.
No, it's been great. Across the board, it's been a really fab month. So we've got a couple of issues that we'll be producing before the end of 2017. Plenty of motorsport to enjoy out there. So you might see Simon Aaron at a circuit called Alton Park over the next few weeks. When are you going back up there?
March.
Really?
No. It's not true.
The racing season is currently the beginning of November. Racing, so there's a rally there on Saturday, but I'm going to the Walter Hayes Trophy.
Yes, of course.
At Silverstone.
which our video guy will be competing in, so look out for Hamish McAllister in his little red Miguel.
Yeah.
Yeah, and beyond that, there's a couple of brands, clubbies, and what I'm going to put in club racing and beyond 2 issues from now, I've no idea.
Well, there's the race of remembrance at Anglesey.
There is that, yes.
As well. So,
didn't we say we had to go?
Do we know anyone that's competing in that?
Well, actually, should we talk about the victory in my...
So, it's been a pleasure to...
Wrapping up, thanks for listening as ever, and we'll join you in a month for the issue commentary for the January 2018 issue. So, thanks for listening. All the best.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.